Good morning. I convene the House Education Finance Committee together. Oh, those are really loud. Okay. It's okay. We have a quorum, so we will get down to business here. Let's see. Representative Purcell, I see the minutes in your hand. Have you had a chance to peruse the March 17th minutes, and would you like to move them?
Yes, Madam Chair, it's my motion.
Representative Purcell moves the March 17th minutes before the committee for approval. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. The March 17th minutes are adopted. With that, Representative Edelson, welcome to your committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if we want to deal with all the amendments first.
Yes, so we're just going to deal with yours to get the bill in the shape you like. Would you like to move House File 629 before the committee for the with the intention that the bill will be laid over for inclusion in the Education Finance Bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, that is my motion.
Thank you. Members, we have House File 629 before us, and then Representative Edelson, you have an author's amendment of DE-16. Would you like to move that before the committee as well?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the DE-16, and if the members wouldn't mind adopting that, and I can speak to the larger bill.
Oh, could you speak up? I didn't quite hear you. Sorry.
Oh, yes, if we could adopt the DE-16, and then I can speak to the entirety of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Edelson, and that is the intention of the chair as well. We're going to move the DE-16 to get the bill in the shape the author would like for discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The DE-16 is adopted. With that, Representative Edelson, go ahead and present your bill.
All right, Madam Chair and members, this is quite a large bill, but what it is called is the READ Act. It's a really important piece of legislation that's looking to make some big investments of $100 million in ensuring that we have teachers prepared coming in our K-12 facilities, or schools, should I say. And I just, before I can go into this further, I just want to welcome, I understand there's a bunch of principals here, right? Raise your hand, principals. Thank you for all of your work. So what this bill does, and I'm happy to take members' questions because it is quite big to walk through, but the current draft of the DE-16 does merge some of the governor's language with bold literacy with the READ Act. It is really seeking to make sure that we offer professional development within that $100 million for all teachers in pre-K through five. As well, we will be, I think, having probably to merge it down. I've been waiting for the fiscal note so that we could see if that would be three, pre-K through three. It also does all intervention teachers K through 12. The READ Act also makes an investment in curriculum. There has historically been some materials that have targeted our schools that maybe are not the best ways to teach reading. And so this offers districts, as many of them are looking to change a curriculum this year with the English language standards, to change curriculum. This offers districts extra funds. Curriculum is very expensive. In this whole process, I've been looking at it. Curriculum for one classroom alone of 25 students can be $2,500. So the READ Act is really seeking to make sure that we're supporting our districts with purchasing new curriculum, new intervention materials for those K through 12 districts. It would provide a screener that MDE would choose from and offer to districts. With that screener, we would screen at the first 6 weeks and the last 6 weeks of the school year. This is a better, so say for instance, that's a fast bridge. This is a much better way to tell whether or not our students are reading at grade level and what interventions and progress monitoring can be done versus the MCAs are a really poor tool to really, to say our kids are or are not reading at grade level. So with that, all of those things will be compiled into a report called the Local Literacy Plan, which districts already use. We move that from July 1 to August 1st. On August 1st, what would be reported are the screeners, the intervention strategies, the literacy curriculum that is used within that district so that we have an understanding of which materials are being used throughout the state. It seeks to add in the MTSS framework. In my bill, the READ Act, we encourage MTSS framework, but we do not mandate it. It also directs MDE to develop a model local literacy plan. The one other thing I just would like to highlight in this is we, on the first few pages of the bill, we get rid of World's Best Workforce reporting on literacy. I think the intention was really good, but the reporting is not used. And I really think beefing up the local literacy plan will help the state. It will help districts see what's happening throughout our state. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. Since we are the Finance Committee as well, could you maybe highlight the two different appropriations on 19 and 20 and just walk us through those?
So, yes.
Representative Edelson, I just had a little birdie whisper in my ear that we have a preliminary fiscal note that's getting printed out right now, but maybe you can just briefly talk while we're waiting for that for about the appropriations itself in subdivision in section 15 for subdivision 2 and 3 first, and then as we're passing out this way.
Very good. Madam Chair, I'm very excited about the fiscal note I've been waiting for. So on line 19.5, the READ Act instructional materials are for the curriculum-based grants or interventional-based grants. And then also 19.23 is the professional development grants that would go to districts. I am trying to make sure that we word it in so a way that it's not cumbersome to districts so that they can tell us the goal is for the professional development and for the curriculum that they offer what they have maybe purchased or what they would like to purchase, and then we can reimburse for professional development, carry under its duties, because there is a huge portion of this bill that is that partnership with the University of Minnesota Carey, and Dr. Gibbons is here to answer questions. But what that would do is offer at least three professional development options. And so districts can identify how many teachers that they have through this, who we have essentially titled here. So pre-K through 5, or if we end up at 3, as well as interventional teachers, curriculum directors. They would tell MDE how many teachers they have to be trained, and then we would be able to reimburse. And it gives districts the flexibility on which maybe they want to send some of their teachers through one training and then some through another training. And then it also, we're trying to work out, some of our colleagues from rural schools have talked about how the cumbersome grants can be for districts. And so we're really trying to make the curriculum grants less cumbersome as well. So those are the two fiscal areas.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. And then Ms. Beckel, will you briefly go over the fiscal note?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Solveig Beckel, House Fiscal. The fiscal note, of course, does mention the two appropriations that are directly appropriated in the bill as well. But above those costs, the fiscal note identifies costs of $2.282 million in fiscal years 24 and 25 for a total of $4.564 million in additional costs in the first biennium. And then it also identifies costs of $637,000 and $572,000 in fiscal years 26 and 27, respectively. For a total of $1.209 million above the base in fiscal years 26 and 27. Please note, however, this is a preliminary fiscal note, so these are costs for the Minnesota Department of Education only, and these do not include any costs that may be incurred by the University of Minnesota. Of course, MDE is likely to incur larger costs here. If we move further into the fiscal note, page 2 and the beginning of page 3 discuss the bill description. As we move down the page 3, you can take a look at the assumptions in the middle of page 3 there. Section 6 and 7, MDE basically says they can absorb those costs using existing resources and staff. Section 7, they start by identifying where they would need additional resources, describing items in the bill that would require additional funding for upfront minute programming for IT and data analytics, where they identify additional FTEs or full-time equivalents, and then explaining
the costs there. Then if you flip over to page 4, they go into greater detail about the costs that they would incur for implementing Section 9. They discuss the costs for the lead literacy specialist, the costs they'd have for the partnership with CARI, the costs for the request for proposal process, which they estimate at $200,000 per year, the IT contract costs for building out the screening tools and best practices, which they estimated $100,000 per year for 2 years. And then they do identify some travel costs for their partnership with the University of Minnesota as well. And then they go into some detail about the grant administration costs that they would incur. Let's see, moving down, they also discuss costs incurred through Section 12 with the REDACT Implementation Advisory Council work. And then they provide their fairly elaborate chart listing out those costs that I just discussed in paragraph form, now in chart form. Madam Chair, that is all I have to say, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Beckel, for being a good sport about me putting you on the spot like that. So members have the fiscal note in front of them. And with that, Representative Edelson, I think we will go to your testifier. And first up, we have Amelia Kelcher. Remotely, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Amelia Kelcher, and I am a special education teacher who works with children with learning disabilities, emotional and behavioral disorders, autism spectrum disorder, and developmental and cognitive disabilities. I'm here today to show my full support of the READ Act. As a special education teacher, I can say that the science of reading has changed the lives of the students that I teach. My students' reading abilities, confidence, and attitudes towards school grow in astounding ways. I have seen how students are unlocking the code as they begin to learn reading skills in a systematic way that they can then generalize into the books they are reading in their classrooms. Students are excited about reading once they are equipped with the tools and knowledge that they need to master basic skills. I have seen significant growth in students whose achievement scores were the lowest. After 2 years of implementing a reading curriculum based on the science of reading, many of my students are able to read grade level material that they were not previously able to. I've even been able to dismiss my students from special education services because of the growth that was made, and I believe that this is because of the science of reading. After 2 years of a reading program based on the science of reading, not only did one of my students meet expectations on their reading MCA, but they scored at the top of their entire grade. The science of reading is life-changing for so many children who need explicit, systematic, and sequential instruction in order to learn how to read. It dismays me to hear that people still hold the belief that students with disabilities will never be able to read at grade level and that we should never expect them to. This belief is false. Not only is this untrue, but it is damaging to the children we work with. We should all hold high expectations for every child, and we should know and understand that it is possible for us to close reading gaps, and that should be our ultimate goal for every student. Lowering our expectations of children causes children to lower expectations of themselves. Practices based on the science of reading are necessary for some and beneficial to all. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next up, we have Malachi Johnson. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Malachi Johnson. I've been teaching for 20 years. I've taught third grade. I've been a reading and math support teacher, and I'm currently live in my fifth grade classroom. What we've been doing isn't working, and I see the negative effects daily. What is literacy? Literacy is access to a better life and hope of a better future. Literacy is opportunity, the opportunity to reach your full potential and become who you want to be. But most importantly, literacy is civil rights. I'm a huge proponent of using culturally relevant teaching strategies and material. And I believe that good teaching using the science of reading includes having kids read culturally relevant texts and using culturally relevant instructional practices when delivering instruction. Science of reading does not cancel a teacher's ability to teach using culturally relevant strategies. Science of reading does not stop a teacher from doing the magic that we do on a daily basis. Our students deserve better than what we've been giving them, and we have the opportunity here to provide students with the tools and access to a better life. Educators need the support and help to start repairing this broken system that we have. The READ Act can be that support. Support for teachers to give students access to high-quality reading instruction. With the READ Act, teachers will have the training and tools to support our students and begin to close the large literacy discrepancies we have in Minnesota and provide our students with the opportunities to access the amazing advantages that come from being able to read. I love this quote by Frederick Douglass. It says, "Once you learn to read, you will be forever be free." Our students deserve the best, and our teachers deserve to have the tools to create access and opportunities for the students in Minnesota. I ask that you listen to educators, people in the game, doing the work. We look into the kids' eyes every day and see the amazing things that these kids are capable of. We see the pride kids have when they can read, and I will tell you from experience, there aren't many things better than that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Malachi Johnson, and thank you to both the educators for being willing to give us remote testimony. We're lucky to have that in our room so we can have your voices at the table. Next up, we have Susan Inspar. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, my name is Susan Inspar. I am the Director of Public Policy and Legislation for PACER Center. I have been working with school districts and on behalf of school districts for almost 40 years now as an attorney and an advocate. I am here to support the READ Act, and in support of that, I want to tell you a couple of stories that I have, experiences I have with Minnesota parents. I'm a supervising advocate at PACER Center, and one day, and this is actually before COVID, I had one of the advocates come to me and say, "You know, Susan, I don't know what to do with this case. Can you help me with it, please?" And I said, "Certainly," because that's what I do as a supervisor. And I said, "Let me look over the testing," because the school district had denied this child learning an IEP for specific learning disability in the area of reading. And I looked over the testing, which you may or may not know, in Minnesota, requires the student to be significantly behind in terms of their reading skills by comparison with their average to above average IQ. And this child was, and I said, "Well, I don't understand. The testing bears this out, and according to the state, the child qualifies. What's the problem?" And the problem was that the school district was coming back and saying, "Well, this child is just on par with his classmates." That should not be. And so that is the reason I'm supporting the READ Act. I am consistently contacted by parents throughout the state of Minnesota who are telling me that school districts are denying their request for an evaluation because their child just isn't functioning low enough in terms of their reading ability and their classmates. And lo and behold, when the school district eventually agrees to provide the evaluation, the child is significantly below. And by significantly, I mean 2 years or more. In the United States, 59% of Americans read at sixth grade or below. There have been longitudinal studies of children who are low IQ, mild to moderate, and even nonverbal who have benefited from the science of reading.
Ms. Inspar, could you, you're past the 2 minutes. Could you please wrap it up?
Yes, I'm wrapping it up right now. Thank you for that cue. They have been shown, surprisingly enough, once they graduate, to be able to read at the sixth grade level. I'm happy to supply any information any of the legislators would like to see. I thank you so much for your time today and for entertaining my comments. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, next up, we have Kate Chappelle. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, thank you for having me today. My name is Kate Scapple. I'm the Elementary Curriculum and Gifted and Talented Coordinator for School District 197 in West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, and Eagan. Over the last 20 years, I've taught various levels from preschool to third grade. I've spent the last 10 years of my career developing and implementing curriculum in all content areas, including reading. When I was working on my undergraduate degree in elementary education, I was taught about teaching phonics, reading comprehension, writing. When I got to my dream job of teaching full-time in a first-grade classroom, I was teaching a small group guided reading lesson, and the reading specialist at my school was there to support me. As I was working with a child to decode or sound out a word, she stopped me in the middle of the lesson and told me, "We don't sound out words here." I was instructed to use a three cueing strategy that quote-unquote good readers use. I was confused, but did what I was told and then trained to do. This was a model that was widespread across school districts around the country. It was all about the joy of reading and that children will pick up words just by looking at text. We were teaching letter names and sounds, but then not really letting kids apply that when they were actually reading. Based on the experiences of my current school district, I feel the greatest need is training and materials that support a thorough, structured reading program that includes the systematic instruction of phonics and phonemic awareness, in addition to fluency, reading comprehension, word study, and of course, writing. Buying materials that follow a structured literacy approach informed by the science of reading is only one step in this process. We need training and coaching to make that the best that it can be. The READ Act would provide districts access to funds that will allow them to provide this for their students. I appreciate the focus of the READ Act on evidence-based programs and training that follows the science of what we have learned about the brain and how all children learn to read. Teaching a child to read is the most important and the most difficult thing a teacher teaches. Let's give them access to quality resources and training to do it well so that all students can feel successful in learning to read.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Dr. Kim Gibbons. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Kim Gibbons, and I'm the director of the Center for Applied Research and Educational Improvement at the University of Minnesota and the co-director of the Wisconsin-Minnesota Comprehensive Center, which is one of 19 federally funded centers to work with states to help them implement and sustain evidence-based practices. I'm here today to share our capacity and expertise to engage in the tasks identified in the READ Act that we would be asked to complete. CARI services are currently organized in four areas: research, program evaluation, literacy, and technical assistance to school districts on the implementation of the MTSS framework, which is the current school improvement framework endorsed by MDE. Through the Comprehensive Center, we are in our fourth year of working with MDE and have spent the last 3 years helping develop and implement a Minnesota MTSS framework, and also work in several districts in Minnesota and the country. Across the country, we have formed an excellent partnership with MDE that has formed the basis for the significant progress we've made. The Minnesota Center for Reading Research also moved over to CARI a year ago, and we're working in several schools around the country on improving literacy outcomes through technical assistance, coaching, and professional learning. We currently have a statewide contract with Nevada to train all teachers on the science of reading. Finally, I am the principal investigator on one of the largest studies ever funded by IES at the federal government. We're currently working in 50 schools across 10 states to provide support on improving literacy outcomes within an MTSS framework in grades 1 and 2. And as part of that support, we have worked with each district to select a reliable and valid assessment system. We provide 5 days of training every summer to all sites on the science of reading to improve their core reading instruction. We've developed an intensive coaching curriculum where we provide master coaching to local coaches in each building who are regularly in the classrooms coaching teachers. We provide support to the building MTSS teams monthly. And finally, we identified an evidence-based intervention to use for students who need additional support. We purchased that through the study for the districts. We've trained interventionists to use the program. Students are progress monitored, and we provide support to local coaches. So the activities, in summary, the activities in the bill are a great match for our expertise, and we look forward to our continued partnership with MDE to improve literacy outcomes in our state.
Thank you so much, Dr. Gibbons. Next up, we have three members of the public that have signed up to testify. First up, we have Peter Hutchinson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Peter Hutchinson. I live in Minneapolis. In my career, I've had the honor of serving the state of Minnesota as your Commissioner of Finance, now called MMB. And I've also had the honor of serving the people of Minneapolis as their superintendent of schools. I see the READ Act as essential to ending the crisis in reading that we face in Minnesota. And clearly, it would make a significant difference for the lives of our people, for the health of our communities, and the future of our economy. I've been very, very excited at the evolution of this legislation over the course of this session, and want to commend Representative Edelson and everyone else who's worked on it. It's only getting stronger as you spend more time on it. And in particular, the way you're combining the READ Act and the Bold Literacy Initiative into something that could be really compelling. I have a few suggestions for ways to make what is a really strong piece of legislation even stronger. First, I would urge you to extend the required professional development in the elementary grades to include building administrators, the principals. It's incredibly important to teachers that they be surrounded by a culture that reinforces those kinds of activities, and to make that professional development available, should districts decide, to teachers and administrators in both middle and high school. Secondly, I think it's incredibly important that in any professional development, licensure activity, curriculum for teachers, that we impart both content knowledge about evidence-based reading, but also hands-on experiences. Think about getting a driver's license, right? You have to pass the written test, but you actually have to drive the car. We need to help our teachers gain confidence in using these skills by both imparting the knowledge, but also giving the opportunity, requiring, frankly, that they use that knowledge in practice before they are certified as having successfully completed. And then this must be true for our professional development activities, for already licensed teachers, for our relicensure process and initial licensure. We should not ask teachers to go into the classroom with new skills that they haven't actually practiced with real students. Similarly, our teacher preparation programs ought to be required to provide coursework that includes both content knowledge and hands-on practice. And we should expect that when they graduate someone, they're actually certifying that these new teachers have the skills to develop that knowledge today, right away, first day, so that no student has to suffer what my students suffered with when I started teaching, not really knowing how to do what it was I was licensed to do. Finally, a couple things about funding. If it were only up to me, and as a former finance commissioner, I'd say, what's the highest return on investment we can get in education? This is it. So I would urge you to really consider increasing the funding for the READ Act, for the implementation, for the training of teachers by tenfold. We're 20 years behind in making the changes we need. We've got the resources. We don't need to make this permanent, but if we could take some of that one-time money and invest it in starting an exciting, differentiated program for our teachers, get the initiative going, the momentum going in our direction, it would make a huge difference.
Excuse me, finally, Mr. Hutchinson, could you please wrap it up? Thank you.
Yep, I'm on to finally. allow institutions to use these resources to pay teachers directly and to provide incentive for teachers, and to use the resources for high dosing interventions with current students as part of the developmental process in order to make it successful. And with that, thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee.
Thank you so much. Finally, we have Bobby Burnham from MDE. Oh, sorry. I'll go to Nafisa Muhammad, who's also remote, first, and then Bobby Burnham, you can still have a seat. Nafisa Muhammad, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Nafisa Muhammad, and I am a high school English teacher taking a time out. After 8 years of teaching, I decided to take a mental health break. I now get to support teachers as Deputy Director of Campaigns at Educators for Excellence, supporting those who are fighting to stay in the classroom. Investing in our practice and in our profession will help. In HF 629, the READ Act, it is an effort to take what we know about education research, cognitive development, and how students learn to read and apply all that to meaningful public policy. We agree with the author and we support this effort. Teaching is an art and science. It's the reason why I got a psychology degree before getting my master's in education. I emphasize adolescent psychology and the impact of trauma on learning because I knew I wanted to be a teacher. Specifically, I needed to understand how children of color who were victims of intersectionality, of institutional racism, could still learn and thrive. As a Black teacher, I understand the science behind the role model effect. I understand the neurological science and cultural connections that play in teaching instruction. I also understand the science behind direct instruction and differentiation. This bill sets a good direction for our state. Have all students reading at above grade level by the end of third grade in 2025. We need an ambitious goal because many students are not achieving at grade level, and we have some of the largest disparities gaps in education in the country. Minnesota's educational systems are failing our students when it comes to reading. Nearly half of all students in Minnesota are not reading at grade level, according to the MCA test. We need to remake the literacy curriculum to conform with evidence-based reading instruction. We also support the author's effort to address equity in education and incorporate measures that examine the equitable distribution of well-trained teachers, innovative strategies and resources to ensure low-income and children of color, indigenous children, and English language learners receive the support needed to succeed. As educators, we know the fundamental premise for learning to read in order to read to learn is a fundamental to education. This policy is long overdue, and we appreciate that Rep. Eldison and the committee's effort to move this forward. We can do better. We know how to do better. Our students and teachers are worth it, but most importantly, we deserve this investment. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Abby Burnham with us. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, committee members. My name is Bobby Burnham, and I serve as the Assistant Commissioner for the Office of Teaching and Learning at the Minnesota Department of Education. We appreciate the ongoing partnership and working together with Representative Edelson to merge our bills and to participate in the feedback sessions that she and her team have had with our stakeholders. We are aligned in the importance of high expectations for all students, evidence-based instruction, including explicit, systematic instruction to ensure student mastery of foundational reading skills delivered through a multi-tiered systems of support framework. We agree on the need to use literacy incentive aid to support comprehensive literacy reform efforts. We are aligned on a commitment to providing teachers with training on evidence-based instruction and schools using an evidence-based screener from an MDE-approved menu to collect and submit K-3 literacy data in support of improved student outcomes. BOLD and the READ Act also recognize the important role of a qualified literacy specialist and the role they play in supporting improved reading outcomes for all students. We know we have work ahead of us this week and commit to working together to merge these bills in order to offer the highest level of support and resources to our school leaders and educators, which will result in more children reading at grade level every year beginning in kindergarten. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, members, I think we're going to go to the other amendments that have been filed. And it's my understanding that Representative Bennett, which one would you prefer to do? Representative Bennett, I think, is what I'm hearing. Would you like to move your DE-15 amendment?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the DE-15 amendment. Thank you.
So the DE-15 amendment's before us at the table. Go ahead and explain.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members and Representative Edelson. And first of all, I want to say that this is not like a gotcha amendment or anything. Representative Edelson and I have been working together for quite some time and having lots of great discussions. This is our sincere effort in attempting to make this bill the best that it can be. And this is a passion of mine as a former first grade teacher. Reading was my ultimate favorite, the teaching of reading. And I know how that empowers children. So if I could name my top priority this session of anything that we've discussed in this legislature thus far, it's this issue and this bill. And I believe that the majority of the bill is excellent. So what this amendment does, it actually keeps most of the language. Now, we did not have the author's newest DE and would have included much of that had we had that and would still be very willing to do so. But this just adds some clear, precise language that references the science of reading. And I'd like to explain why we believe this is so important. Nobody denies the reading crisis that we're in. Every one of those testifiers we saw at the beginning, I believe that were the authors' testifiers, boldly stated that it's the science of reading research is what works. And I think in this bill, we have to make that ultra clear. And it reminds me, I thought of this, I think it's an old folk tale about the blind man and the elephant and how each blind man was at a different portion of the elephant, feeling, you know, the leg, the tail, the trunk, and so on. And each described something totally different. And if they had just been told it was an elephant, it would have cleared up everything and made sure that it was absolutely clear what that was. And that's what this amendment is attempting to do. It adds those definitions that this is truly based on the science of reading. Structured literacy is incredibly important. We have that in there too, as I know the author does. That is actually the application of science of reading research. And in the legislature, we know how important language is, because if it's not precise, it will be human nature just works around it, and it's not going to be what we intend here if we are not very careful in how we word things. And I would just propose this, that those who are opposed to the term science of reading, which has basically, it's been removed from this bill now, those who are opposed to that term are opposed to it because they're opposed to the practice. So there's a reason they don't want that term in this bill. And so we believe we need to put that term, because as we heard from all the testifiers, from Dr. Gibbons on down, the science of reading is the foundation to what we're trying to get at. And so we don't believe there should be any wiggle room allowed. We need to be clear. We need to call, you know, the elephant instead of, you know, a trunk or a tail or whatever. So I hope the author will accept this amendment. I commit to continuing to work on this. Again, it's a passion of mine to make this bill the best it can be and provide schools the resources that they need to make sure that we're teaching exactly what we should be, and not allowing the textbook companies and those who have been trying to basically deceive teachers and administrators and so on for many, many years, saying this is evidence-based, this is working, and it wasn't. So let's be clear, that's what this amendment does.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Bennett. I do believe that your intentions are good here. I have a saying, too, that my grandfather used to always say to me, and I think it's really true in public policy, is we have to remember to see the forest through the trees. And so what I would say here is the amendment that we adopted today, the DE-16, if you look at evidence-based under the definitions, and if you look at structured literacy under 10.21, you'll see just how strong that language is. And I just want to reference a few of the other states, because we're not the only state across the nation that's dealing with exactly what you just defined as a problem. But the only states that have adopted science of reading by itself are four states: Alabama, and actually Washington, D.C., which technically really isn't a state, but Oklahoma and Utah. So we have three states that have Colorado, Kentucky, and North Carolina that have used both evidence-based and science of reading. One state, which was just structured literacy, and the others, two states specifically that we model a lot in this conversation, don't use either. They just say evidence-based science, scientific-based reading, and that's Mississippi and that's Connecticut. So I guess I would ask members to vote against this legislation or this amendment. I do really like you, Representative Bennett, and I do believe that you care about this issue. I do hope that when you or some of your members will sign on to this legislation, because it has so many guardrails. We have CARI, who our research center in the University of Minnesota, an MDE vetting through at least five approved curriculum, at least three approved professional developments. We have to trust that within that, we know what happened, we know what the policy problem is. we have to figure out ways to move forward together. So I genuinely, I do hope that you'll consider signing on, that I have thought much about this. I'll tell you, as somebody that was held back in third grade, that struggled with reading and believing that nobody thought I could, that I was dumb, that I couldn't. Well, I wasn't. I had something that was called dyslexia, and I had no idea what it was. I have two sons that have dyslexia, and in seventh grade cannot read. So if you think that within this, I'm not going to be very strong in terms of the terminology, I think that we just need to continue to have conversations. With that, Madam Chair, I ask everybody vote no on the DE-15.
Thank you. Members, any other question on the amendment? I saw hands toward, nope, okay. Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, thank you, and I appreciate that, Representative Edelson. And I can tell you that my team and I want very badly to sign on to this bill, even though there are a lot of mandates in this, and you know we don't like mandates. We like to encourage our schools rather than making them do it. But we're willing to compromise on those mandates if we know that the language is strong enough to make sure it's going to work and do what it's going to do. And I guess we're going to disagree on that strength of that language in the bill, because I do believe it has some ambiguity to it yet. Allowing wiggle room, but hopefully we can continue to work ahead. Madam Chair, I would like to request a roll call, I guess, on this amendment, but I thank you, Representative Edelson, and we'll pledge to continue to work with you. I want to support it.
Roll call being requested. Roll call will be taken. Ms. Abraha, will you please take the roll? Chair Yuki?
No.
Vice Chair Clardy?
No.
Here, Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Altendorf is not. Representative Bateberg?
Yes.
Representative Bennett?
Yes.
Representative Edelson?
No.
Representative Greenman?
No.
Representative Hill?
No.
Representative Hudella?
Yes.
Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Knudsen?
Yes.
Representative Prez Vega?
No.
Representative Pryor?
No.
Representative Purcell?
No.
Representative Ream?
No.
Representative Sensenmura?
No.
Representative West?
Yes.
There are 6 yes and 11 no's.
Thank you, Ms. Braha. With 6 yes and 11 no's, the amendment is not adopted. With that, we'll move over to the DE-14, which I believe is Representative Baker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move the DE-14 amendment.
Thank you. The DE-14 amendment's before us. Go ahead and proceed.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for hearing our DE-14 amendment. Before I jump into just the specifics of the amendment, I'd like to also commend Rep. Edelson on her hard work on this bill and really just this important topic. We have got to get this right. We have to work together because at the end of the day, it's our kids across Minnesota that are going to be impacted by the decisions that we make today. So, I'll speak for myself, but I believe I speak for my colleagues on this side of the aisle. We want to do everything in our power to make this bill the best that it can be. I'd also like to welcome my principal colleagues from across Minnesota as well. And what you're seeing today is politics in action, I guess. So in summary, this amendment begins with very clear, very direct, and unapologetic definition of the science of reading that excludes the three cueing systems that is very clear. The amendment updates the Read Well by Third Grade law with other provisions aligned with a new, stronger definition for the science of reading. The amendment prohibits the use of whole language, balanced literacy, and the three cueing system in our teacher prep programs. And I think it's fitting that there are principals here today because many of us have probably adopted curriculums under the notion that that was best practice. And I'll just say for myself, I was wrong. That was a wrong thing to do. The amendment adds to the list of recommendations for literacy aid, including meeting the requirement for the third grade proficiency goal, professional development, and bonuses and stipends for teachers and paraprofessionals. The amendment includes our reading reset proposal providing $225 million in funding to reimburse schools to purchase new curriculum, books, and training aligned with the science of reading if they agree to abandon the failed whole language, balanced literacy, and three cueing system. This method includes, or this includes funding for professional development so teachers and staff can be trained in the science of reading and funding for tutors to help struggling readers catch up and be able to read. Very simply, that's what the amendment does. It strengthens the hard work that Rep. Ellison does, has been doing. It provides clarity for the principals in the room, for the principals in their building, and for teachers and educators across the state. When fewer than half of our students are reading at grade level, this is a crisis. And this amendment, or this deserves a crisis response. The Reading Reset Fund is set up like a disaster relief cleanup fund to replace the toxic materials in our schools, within our curriculums, the books, and provides training we know will work because it's grounded very clearly in the science of reading. As Rep. Bennett said, those opposing the term science of reading are not opposed to the term. They are opposed to the practice. Do not be misled by the reading charlatans. We cannot turn our back on the science of reading when fewer than half of our students are not reading at grade level. We cannot abandon our children for those interested in protecting their pockets, money, and protecting systems that are more comfortable for adults than they are for kids. To be blunt, the whole language or balanced literacy approach is a scam and quite possibly one of the greatest frauds in education over the last 40 years. As educators, principals in the room, we have been lied to and told to ignore our gut feelings about what was happening to kids in front of us, told to ignore the science that we see. I know our teachers are wanting help so that they can help students. We need to help our teachers. As a parent and as parents, we have been lied to and told our kids, you'll be fine. They'll catch up. They'll catch up. Parents, it's not your fault either. There is still time for us to get this right as a committee to put money on the table so people can get the help they need for the kids. If this committee wants to put their money where their mouth is, the real investment is in the science of reading. It's an investment in our schools, our teachers, our parents, and most importantly, our students. Thank you, Madam Chair. And with that, I would request a roll call.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Sounds like you have your third floor speech down, and that doesn't really fit with committee work, but we'll go on. Members, there's been a roll call requested, so roll call will be taken. Will the CLA please take the roll? Oh, sorry. I'm just moving on ahead with that. Representative Edelson, I did not mean to ignore you because I know how hard you've worked on this bill for over a year. So thank you, Representative Edelson. Go ahead.
Yes, Madam Chair, and in all of those meetings, Representative Baker, I've engaged with superintendents, with principals, with teachers, all throughout the entire state of Minnesota. And I don't know about how you do things in the school, but typically name-calling here, like charlatans, just doesn't work. Not exactly who you're referring to, but I would say this. With regards to publishers and how this has all gone down, I think that we have agreement, but what this bill does is it has been led by Minnesotans, led by people, literacy experts right here in our state. And I would say our districts want to do the right thing. Just because you say something, it's the science of reading, it does not, you have to have buy-in. You know that as a principal, you have to have buy-in. Teachers don't go into the teaching profession because they want to ruin children's lives. They were lied to. And I think, you know, roll call these all day long. But I'll tell you what, when our members vote on the final DE-16, they're voting on a bill that has been vetted with teachers, with districts, with people that want to actually improve this system collaboratively. And it has way more parameters than your DE-14. So I ask members to vote no.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. With that, members will move to a roll call vote.
Chair Yuhi.
No.
Vice Chair Clardy.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Bakeford.
Yes.
Representative Bennett.
Yes.
Representative Edelson.
No.
Representative Greenman.
No.
Representative Hill.
No.
Representative Padilla.
Yes.
Representative Jordan.
No.
Representative Knuth.
Yes.
Representative Perez Vega.
No.
Representative Pryor.
No.
Representative Purcell.
No.
Representative Ream.
No.
Representative Sensenmura.
No.
Representative West.
Aye.
There are 6 ayes and 11 noes.
With 6 ayes and 11 noes, the amendment has not been adopted. With that, members, we'll go to questions at the table. Seeing that, oh, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank the author for her dedication, her passion, all of the different stakeholders and groups that I know that you have been working tirelessly for, sometimes literally sacrificing sleep to do. Thank you. Our students appreciate you. And I wanted to just reiterate a comment that I heard Peter Hutchinson, the former superintendent of Minneapolis Public Schools, as I think maybe you didn't hear it as a compliment to you, but I want to reiterate it as a compliment to you that he has been paying attention, and he said this has only been getting stronger as you've worked on it, and he would know. And I appreciate you, and I just want to thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee. Thank you, Representative Edelson. And I'm going to say how lucky I have been because being part of the policy committee, we got to hear about the work that you were doing as before you brought it before the committee. And then I think in our hearing, again, we got to hear from so many folks that have participated in this and to actually be just overwhelmed with what they bring to this bill right now. And I do also want to mention that there were people in policy that came forward and said, nope, you know, this goes too far. You know, it's missing some important and key elements in learning reading. And people that are devoting their lives in the roles that they have been because they care so passionately about helping kids read. And they really do want to do the very best way possible and use the best technique possible. But, you know, they're in a situation right now where there's been, you know, not clarity in what the best way forward is. And what your bill does is it says those people still belong. Those people are still valuable. We're going to move in a new direction, but we're going to do it collectively. And we're not going to stigmatize. We're not going to dehumanize, basically, by calling them names. But we're going to bring forward everybody in a way, and in a strong, structured way, with the support and the resources we need to do it right. So it's more than just dictating from on high what the answer is, but it's including people in what the answer is. And I know that that's been your process, and it has been difficult and time-consuming, and it's just starting. And that it's we're nowhere near, but we are in a way that we will not reverse, but we'll be going forward and we will be a leader. And I know that in Minnesota, and I'm just so glad that I've gotten to participate in it and be part of the process with you. And I know so many are there with you, and thank you for your leadership on that. Thank you, Madam Chair, for bringing forward the bill and considering it in our work going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Pryor, and thank you for the policy committee, which a lot of you sit on, for hearing this twice to make sure that the work was being done and it was right. So, Representative Perez-Vega. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. It's really such great efforts that you came a long way. I spoke this past weekend with a constituent who's a teacher at Riverview Elementary, a third grade teacher, who's been teaching in St. Paul Public Schools for over 15 years. And she stated how important this is to support, just in regards to what local literacy looks like for different districts across the spectrum. There's, you know, different technicalities, differences in diversity in languages. And this really, really captures how we can grow as a force for literacy for our schools throughout the state of Minnesota. And it's really special. And I just wanted to emphasize a constituent and a St. Paul Public School teacher in my district who really is proud of the work that's being done with this. Thank you.
Representative Harris Vega, with that, are there any other comments or questions? Well, then I will just also add to the thanks, Representative Edelson, for working so hard on this. I know it hasn't been an easy road. Oh, Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, thank you. I don't know if this is the proper time to do this, but I would like to make a motion to move House File 629 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. And the reason I'm doing that is though Rep. Edelson has a good bill, I think it could be more clear. But I think it's hugely important, and it needs to go to Ways and Means so that we can send this as a standalone bill to the floor. It's just as important as I know we've had universal lunches and menstrual products. Well, this is highly important. It needs to go to the floor. So, Madam Chair, I would make that move.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. I'm a little
confused. I asked for a roll call, too.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Little confused since you just tried to delete it all twice, that now you're okay with it. So we do our work here in committee. We will not be sending this to Ways and Means. It does have a fiscal note that's still a draft fiscal note, and we still have some work to do on it. So with that, members, roll call has been requested, and roll call will be taken. We need to let Shimada Baha catch up a little bit, and you're awesome. Thank you.
Representative Yukian.
No.
Representative Clardy.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Baker.
Yes.
Representative Bennett.
Yes.
Representative Edelson.
No.
Representative Greenman.
No.
Representative Hill.
No.
Representative Hudella.
Yes.
Representative Jordan.
No.
Representative Knudsen.
Yes.
Representative Perez Vega.
No.
Representative Pryor.
No.
Representative Purcell.
No.
Representative Rain.
No.
Representative Sensenmura.
No.
Representative West.
Aye.
There are 6 ayes and 11 noes.
With 6 ayes and 11 noes, the motion to move this bill to Ways and House File 629 to Ways and Means has not been adopted. So with that, members, seeing no further questions, Representative Edelson, I once again would like to thank you so much for your bill. And it sounds like that now people want to move it to Ways and Means, that maybe like you're going to get some more authors. So we'll have to wait and see. Would you like to do some final comments?
I'll keep it brief because I have a bill up. But I would just thank all of you. I genuinely do. And even you, Representative Bennett and Representative Baker-Berg. Let's stop playing politics at this moment and actually do something bipartisan here. I think as you look at the sacrifices we make to be here away from our families, we want to look back and say that we've done something really good. And when, as Minnesotans, when we know there is a problem, we come together, we don't name call, we don't point fingers, we come together and we uplift each other in order to fix the problem. And that's what we're doing here in the READ Act. I ask that hopefully you put it in the omnibus bill, Madam Chair. And with that, I just thank you all for your time.
With that, members, I'll renew the motion to lay over House File 629 as amended for inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. Members, we have about a half an hour left on our committee time, but I've been told we can go a little bit over because I want to make sure that we get all the testifiers in that have signed up. So right now we have House File 1269 that is next on the agenda. And Representative Pryor, welcome to your committee. And would you like to move House File 1269 before us for discussion? And so, members, just a reminder, this is the education policy bill in its entirety. Representative Chair Pryor and her committee did the work on this bill. In the matter of form, we're bringing it before us for a brief discussion and a little bit more testimony. And the intention of the chair is to lay it over for inclusion in the education finance bill so that we're matched up to go to the floor. So with that, Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee. So we have...
I suppose Representative Pryor should have you move the bill. I just talked right. about it. So go ahead.
And so moved.
All right. Thank you. Go ahead, Representative Pryor.
All right. So the beginning of this bill is the governor's policy bill. And that's what we do, you know, every year, every 2 years. We hear from our governor that's elected statewide to represent the people of Minnesota. So obviously, the governor does have an important part in education in Minnesota. And very much of this bill is actually work that was provided by the governor's office and also the Department of Education. So appreciative and honored that I can carry that part of it. It also reflects member bills that were brought forward this year. And I can also, you know, honestly, we had two good bills brought forward by Republican members, Representative Gilman and Representative Bennett and Lee Bennett. So we appreciate your contribution. You know, and it's in the bill not because, you know, trying to get something in. We're in it because it seemed to be good ideas. And we do appreciate that that bills were brought forward. And I can also say I think in the next session we'll be able to hear more bills too, because I think there's some good ideas and things that we should be bringing forward from both sides of the aisle. So look forward to also to the work next year that we'll be doing in policy committee. But this bill also represents kind of like a backlog of policy that's been considered before, that brought forward by students and parents, educators out there in Minnesota, community members, superintendents, ideas that have been brought forward in past bills that were passed off the House, but were never actually brought across the finish line and enacted into law. So this bill also reflects basically a backlog of things that we've been working on in the past, but have not been able to complete. So with that, you know, it's been a very busy policy session that we've had. Some of the bills that are in that reflected in this policy bill are also going to be heard still in education policy or have been heard. But we're looking at some of just the policy aspects of things, and then we'll be hearing forward. You'll be hearing again in finance or have heard them because they're tied to resources. And I think that's been one of the overwhelming themes that we've had is that you can have changes that we need to do, policies that we need to change, but we also need to keep providing the resources that our districts need to make things happen. So that's a little bit of overview of what this bill is. It's you know, pretty extensive, so I will not go through all of it in this meeting as an introduction, but we have a great description of it, walking through it, done by nonpartisan, so different sections of it, the details of it is all available in our nonpartisan brief. I'll give some of the highlights. One of the things that we did in policy is we talked about the demographics in Minnesota, and what we know is that we have an aging population. Baby boomers up, that's like 65 or so and older, that's the growing part of our population. And that the younger population is very flat and it's less than that baby boom generation. So that means there's fewer students right now. But it also means that every student, we absolutely need to educate to the highest of their ability, because we need every student in Minnesota to succeed. We need every student in Minnesota to be literate. We need every student of Minnesota to find out their path and their passion in life to be a fully functioning citizen of Minnesota. And that includes our students of color and our indigenous students, because we know our disparities in Minnesota are unacceptable. I mean, I just cannot use strong enough terms to describe where we are in Minnesota. And so this bill, that's one of the things, one of the issues and one of the problems that we're trying to address in Minnesota. Also, when we talk about these demographics, we will be a more diverse Minnesota in the future. So as we plan for Minnesota, we have to think about that diversity and how we make sure that each of those students has a place in our classroom and that we're educating them to the highest of their potential. We have to do this. It's the imperative. So some of the issues or some of the policies that we're bringing forward came from our Teachers of Color Act, how we're including, making sure teachers of color can get in the classroom. And a big one of that, a big policy change is, it doesn't sound like a big deal, but we do these tests for teachers. And there are 835 teachers sitting on a Tier 2 license, and all they need to move into that Tier 3 is passing these tests. Now, the thing about these tests, they in no way reflect how you're functioning as a teacher. There's no evidence to say this is weeding out quality teachers from unacceptable teachers. So we're saying we're not going to use those tests to hold teachers back, and that will get us 835 more teachers. And so I think that's a good move forward for our workforce problem, as well as making sure that teachers can get in the classrooms that want to teach. We're also talking about embedding academic standards, ethnic studies into our academic standards. As I said, we have these unacceptable disparities. We have a future of Minnesota that has to have all children be welcomed in the classroom. We need to make sure that all children are reflected in our curriculum. So that's in this policy bill. So we're also, another provision is school boards need to have that plan of how they're going to be working these ethnic studies, this information, this fuller curriculum, how it's going to be reflected in their schools. And we're asking school boards to lead the way on that. There's work that's been done on alternatives to exclusionary discipline. If children are not in the classroom, if they've been removed from school, if they're sitting at home, they're not learning. We've got to find alternatives to these exclusionary practices. And I also want to represent, Representative Ellison's not here, but one of her bills is Recess for All. And again, you know, the full child, the whole child, being punished by not being able to be on the playground with your classmates, this is not healthy for children. So that's another provision that we have about in our looking at discipline and disciplinary practice. We're also talking about workforce. We want to support the teachers in the classroom and other classroom professionals. We want to remove these barriers to licensors. And this test is one of them that I mentioned. And there's others that we're trying to speed up getting people licensed and into the classroom. We've also done work with making sure there's more short-term subs available. And that's in this bill, too. And then also, we want to support the people that support teachers, how they, their unions and the labor organization that supports teachers and is their voice in the classroom. And we're including in the mandatory subject of bargaining, classroom size, and we're making sure that Tier 1 teachers can get representation, too. And that's in this bill. So I think these provisions, what we're saying, what's happened is we need to respect teachers, and we need to respect their representation in the classroom. And I think when we respect teachers, then we respect the people that are closest to our kids, and that we support our kids by supporting the people that are in the classroom with them. And I think, I can't remember Representative Jordan's phrase, but it's really good, and I hope you repeat it. So there's a lot more in the bill. We can have a lot more discussion, but I think we have testifiers that can bring other aspects forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pryor, and thank you for mentioning the fact that some of these provisions are also traveling on their own to finance, because we do want to make sure that we're giving the money and the tools to the districts that they need to do it. For example, Representative Richardson's K-3 language is getting money for training to train teachers and administrators. So. That we're here again Friday. But with that, I will go on to testifiers. We have folks that have signed up for public testimony. First up, we have Katrin Wigfall from the Center for the American Experiment. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Katrin Wigfall, and I am a policy fellow at American Experiment and a former public school teacher. I am speaking today in opposition to HF 1269, focusing my remarks on opposition to the bill's definition of ethnic studies. My opposition is rooted in the plain language of ethnic studies in this bill, which politicizes the opportunity to emphasize ethnic and cultural understanding. That is where the focus must lie, in the actual words used to take over these familiar terms. The definition, though, is being glossed over through emotional appeals that then frame those opposed to this narrow political way of teaching ethnic studies as being closed-minded. But this is not disagreement with the importance of students learning about the histories, challenges, and contributions of different cultures and the varied people groups who have contributed to shaping our great state and country. As a former teacher who had a classroom of diverse students looking to me for knowledge, guidance, and wisdom, I witnessed firsthand the great strength in teaching and celebrating the many cultural backgrounds represented in my classroom. Again, though, that is not what the definition of ethnic studies in HF 1269 is rooted in. Instead, if passed, we would have an ideologically charged course that is not constructive to or supportive of our multi-ethnic state. This liberated version that is overtly political in nature doesn't celebrate individual identities and would instead limit how students view themselves and society. That is what the discussion should focus on. I can't imagine teaching my former students to view themselves and others through this narrow worldview. It risks taking us backward, and I ask you to not include this language in the final omnibus bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Next up, we have Emma Chubb and Melinda Lowe. And then on deck, we'll have Hillary Swanson and Kofi Manska. Go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Emma Jopp. I am currently in my second semester of PSEO classes at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. I am a straight-A student, work part-time, volunteer in my community, and I am a passionate political enthusiast. I am currently on track to complete my AA degree at the same time that I graduate high school. In a recent email sent to PSEO students, UNW stated they, quote, will be faced with making a decision on whether to continue their PSEO programs and to what degree, end quote. If they and other faith-based colleges choose to reduce their PSEO options due to the limitations in this bill, the already limited spots in Minnesota's PSEO program will be greatly reduced. Currently, around 300 students attend PSEO on campus at UNW, and about 440 attend at Crown. The PSEO program has allowed myself and others to reduce the amount of student loan debt we will face in the future, thereby increasing the opportunities we have for a successful career. However, if these close to 1,000 PSEO spots are taken away from Minnesotan students, the opportunities for students who desire to attend a secular university will decrease. The opportunities for each Minnesotan student to achieve financial freedom and a successful career will be reduced. It is also important to realize that the state is not directly funding any school through the PSEO program. In reality, the state is funding the tuition of a student who is registered with the school and eligible for PSEO credit. This financial distinction is crucial. HF 1269 does not provide equal opportunity under the law. It discriminates against students of faith, and it decreases the opportunities that all students have for a successful future. I urge you to strike these lines from HF 1269. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Next up, we have Melinda Lowe, and then on deck, we've got Hillary Swanson. So if you both come up at the same time, that would be helpful. Do we have Hillary Swanson here as well? Thank you. Go ahead and state your name for the record. Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Melinda Lowe, and I'm from Excelsior. I'm a mom of 7 kids, and I'm here in opposition also to the proposed changes to PSEO. I started a Facebook group a couple of weeks ago that currently has 560 members that are also opposed to these changes. 25% of PSEO students currently attend PSEO at faith-based institutions. There's a long-standing precedent of PSCO students attending colleges that require a statement of faith. There is no good reason to change this now. It is obvious this change will force these students, these institutions, to choose between their deeply held religious beliefs or stop offering PSCO in person. Moreover, precedent has been established in Supreme Court rulings, Carson versus Macon and Espinoza versus Montana Department of Revenue, that religious schools should be able to participate in publicly available programs without discrimination, and students should be able to participate in these programs on equal footing as students who attend non-religious schools. Making this change and forcing students away from faith-based colleges to secular universities will only increase the competition for already limited spots and decrease the choices available to all students. The University of Minnesota receives 1,600 applicants per year and only admits 45% of those applicants. My daughter is a sophomore in high school. She wants to be a nurse and will need to take lab science classes in person. She has been planning for years to go to Northwestern as they have a highly rated nursing program. If funding is pulled due to this amendment and PSCO is no longer an option for her at Northwestern, she'll be forced to apply to the U of M instead. Now, my daughter is a straight-A student who is recognized for having one of the top scores in Minnesota on the ACT when she's just 12 years old. So I think it's reasonable to believe that she would be admitted to the U of M. If that happens, she'll be taking one of the limited spots from someone who really did want to attend the U of M. These changes will limit PSCO options for Minnesota students. More choices allow for more options for more students. I'm happy to discuss this further outside of committee time. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Kofi Monska and then Sarah Burt, go ahead and on deck. Oh, Hillary Swanson first, then Kofi Monska. Hillary Swanson, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hillary Swanson. I'm a lifetime resident of Minnesota and a product of public schools. I attended Webster Magnet School, the first magnet school west of the Mississippi from 1977 to 1983. The goal of Webster was to desegregate school on a voluntary basis while providing top-notch education for its students. Children of diverse backgrounds were bused citywide to Webster. We were exposed academically to the best that education could offer. Most of my teachers were white, but that did not impact me. What impacted me was seeing Mr. Berichter, my sixth grade teacher, played basketball with my dad on the school court on some weekends. What impacted me was the high expectation that my teachers had for me and the opportunity to learn how to think critically. We had it all. I read through the bill. I am disturbed about how ethnic studies is defined. The bill states that ethnic studies analyzes the way in which race and racism have been and continue to be a powerful social, cultural, and political force, and the connection of race to the stratification of other groups. But this doesn't help kids to tell them that their skin color determines their outcomes in today's society. This bill's definition of ethnic studies divides and stereotypes by race. It downplays and erases the strength of people committed to a common goal of being united. America is about life, liberty, and the individual pursuit of happiness. It's meant to be a republic if we can keep it. This 2022 MCA data, it shows that from SPPS, it shows that there's only 34% of students who are proficient at reading, 25% for math, and 25% for science. These are dismal numbers. The focus on critical race theory won't improve these numbers. That's not what I learned at Webster. It's not what I learned at home. No one is better than me because of the color of my skin. I am what it means to be black in America. I've been black my whole life, and I will not allow anyone to tell me that they have privilege over me because of my skin. I expect this bill to be reimagined. Get rid of everything having to do with CRT and teach our kids in an uplifting and unifying way. Raise your expectations and theirs. You owe it to them.
Thank you. Next up, we have Kofi Monska, and then Sarah Burt, and then Carrie Weirman. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Kofi Monska. I'm an attorney, wife, and mom to three boys, two of which are in high school. This bill requires that schools teach ethnic studies starting in kindergarten, and I am against this. You might ask, why in the world would a black person speak against ethnic studies? Because not everything that sounds good is good. The definition of ethnic studies right there in the statute says that there is a connection between a person's race and their stratification. The bill tells kids of color that they are stuck in a caste system based on their race. It also tells kids, and I quote, that institutions chronically favor white people and disadvantage people of color. I'm sick of everyone denying the enormous progress we've made in this country, acting like it's 1930. We used to have a race-based system. We got rid of it, and now you're all trying to bring it back. This curriculum will not help kids of color succeed. All it does is remove any reason to try. And I repeat that, it removes any reason to try. And this is not some theoretical crap. This stuff happens. These messages are very harmful. Just last month in my high schooler's band class, the teacher took 20 minutes at the beginning of class to talk about anti-racism. He told the kids to look around. And then he said the black boys in the school would likely not live to retirement because of racism and the police. Another furious kid of color recorded this conversation, and so I was able to hear it for myself with my own ears. If this law is passed, teaching this hopelessness to kids of color will be mandated starting in kindergarten. And I can see why you white proponents of this bill might support it. It's not your kids being told that they can't succeed, and you get to shed some of your white guilt in the process. But you legislators of color, how can you? You made it despite the invisible boogeyman of systematic racism. You were voted in by a majority of white people. You hold some of the most powerful positions in this state. Yet you want to tell my kids and other kids of color that they can't succeed? It's shameful. It's terrible. I ask that you please vote against this bill. Thank you for this opportunity.
I'd like to thank the testifiers for staying within the time period, but also please refrain from what we like to call decorum and not calling names. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Burt, and I'm a lobbyist with Education Minnesota. We appreciate the inclusion of several provisions in this bill I'd like to briefly mention. The requirement that all school workers are paid for e-learning days is an important provision to help retain hourly school workers. The districts rely on the funding from the state to cover their costs of operation during the calendar year, and the workers in the districts are relying on a full paycheck. The language in Article 2, Sections 9 through 12, will help ensure students are learning in more culturally responsive and anti-racist learning environments through defining terms and statutes such as anti-racist, culturally sustaining, ethnic studies, and institutional racism. We appreciate the directive to modify the world's best workforce to ensure students are able to access ethnic studies curriculum in a rigorous, accurate, anti-racist, and culturally sustaining way. No public school student should be required to sign a faith statement. This is not an entry requirement for any K-12 public schools, and we do not believe public school students should be subjected to this practice to attend PSEO. Article 3 makes some important gains in ensuring that public education in Minnesota is reflective of the history of the Indigenous peoples of Minnesota, and that there are sufficient resources at MDE to conduct a needs assessment for the development of future resources for Indigenous education for all. While we appreciate some of the quality control measures put in place around supplemental online instruction found in Article 2, Section 43, Subdivision 6, we think an approval process through MDE for all online learning will ensure a higher quality of level of education is provided through online instruction. We think it's crucial to protect educators from being disciplined around incorporating curriculum contributions by persons in a protected class, and we continue to work with education stakeholders on the specifics of this language in Article 4, Section 2. In order to see the gains we need to see in BIPOC teacher candidates successfully obtaining a teacher license, we appreciate that testing centers will provide opportunities for untimed content and pedagogy exams, that the test fees have been waived for these test takers, and that these exams are available in languages other than English. The data collected from the market need and demand study, that's a new requirement within a charter school's developer application, will help ensure additional layers of transparency for the community and the charter school it's proposed in.
I'll have to ask you to wrap it up. I'm sorry.
Yep, sure thing. Finally, our library and school media centers are important spaces in schools where students need equitable access to resources. The provisions in Article 7, Section 4 will ensure increased access to resources that those spaces are served by a licensed media specialist or a licensed school librarian. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up, we have Carrie Weirman, Jenny Kelly, and then Caitlin Snyder. Thank you for coming up at the same time. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
I'm Dr. Kari Weirman, and thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am an elementary school principal, and I am here to share some concerns and some suggestions for HF 1269, in particular, the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act for K through 3 students. In my background, I have worked in elementary, middle, and high school. I've been in rural Richfield High School. I've been
Dr. at... Dr. Rearman, can you pull the microphone a little bit closer? Thank you.
You bet. I've had a variety of experiences at a variety of schools, and while I'm not representing any one of those schools, I really have a voice that's across the breadth of K-12, rural, kind of into this, to Richfield and all over. And my voice is also that some education group advocates as well as MESPA. The way the bill reads right now is that we have non-exclusionary discipline over here, and then there's no suspension allowed for K-3 students, and then over here is expulsion. And expulsion means that you're out for 12 months, you're out of the district. And I want to say that, yes, fully on board, this non-exclusionary discipline, so, so important. And I would say for over 99% of our students, we can be there 100% of the time. However, there are some exceptions where if you're over here and you're in crisis mode, you cannot come up with good solutions. And to have to go from here to all of a sudden jump over to expulsion, I think of expulsion as like trying to cut a birthday cake with a chainsaw. Yeah, it does the job, but it is the wrong tool. There are times where suspension, even if it's for a couple days, very helpful to pull the team together. We have some very complex collaboration that needs to take place. It is true for bringing in OT, bringing in resources like transportation. What are some, figuring out all the data that we have from behavior analysts. There are a lot of things that we need to pull together. So what are some solutions? The solutions that we have continue to allow the suspensions as is. Trust us to do that. Look at the DERS data. DERS data is all the suspension paperwork that goes to the state and finds out where are things not going well, and then give resources to that. Change the manifestation determination conference instead of 10 days for students in K-3.
Dr. Rearman, I'm sorry, I have to cut everybody else off. Can you wrap it up?
I will. And then to change it to 5 days, fully funding special ed and also adding to the formula. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Next up we have my magnetic personality today, Jenny Kelly, and then Caitlin Snyder, and then Adosha Mee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jennifer Kelly, and I am proudly serve as the principal of St. Michael Albertville Middle School East and the secretary of MASSP, and speak with a unified voice with other educational leadership organizations, and here to speak and ask you to amend HF 1269 and to discuss trust, impact, and mandated funding. While no one would argue that a fraction of principals across the state need to make improvements, as any profession does, why are we strong-arming educational policy to restrict the ability that school principals currently have to ensure that students and staff within our classrooms and hallways are safe and able to learn and grow? I can't imagine a successful business owner, nonprofit organization, or school structure that utilizes the bottom 2% of their human resources performance to mandate policies for 98% of their most valuable assets. The Department of Education currently has reporting procedures to identify which schools are struggling to ensure both academic and behavioral learning is equitable to all students. We believe that every student has the fundamental right to a free and appropriate education, to be seen, heard, valued, and loved as they enter our schoolhouse. Require the Department of Education to provide the necessary support, education, and training within the school systems experiencing systematic issues and disparities among their population, rather than moving forward with a policy handcuffing principals from utilizing their depth of knowledge, effective skill sets, collaborative efforts, and solid decision making. There are instances that necessitate our immediate and thoughtful consideration and decision making. These decisions have significant impacts on our students, their families, and staff members. Removing our ability to exclusionary discipline in the rare instance where it is needed is counterproductive to a student of color being called the N-word, yet offender not removed from the classroom or the schoolhouse in the year 2023. Not only do these behaviors impact individual students, but their families and our communities. Why would we inhibit our ability to keep students and staff safe during a time when we have never seen fewer teachers being produced and the work more challenging? for it won't be the bullies that are leaving our schools, rather the victims who are no longer able to be protected. Finally, this policy encompasses numerous mandates without any mention of mandatory funding.
Could you please wrap it up?
Thank you. Without fully funded mandates, you are requiring districts to take out of their general funds to fulfill these obligations. This year, we are experiencing class sizes as high as 38 to 42 in our fifth grade classrooms.
Kelly, I really need to have you wrap it up. Thank you.
Thank you. Not funding mandates will require spending general fund dollars driving class sizes beyond 42 in a class. Our students deserve better, and our teachers require it. Thank you so much.
Sorry, I have to, just like you do, make people live by the same rules. So next up, we have Caitlin Snyder and then Adele Shuni. Please state your name for the record. Proceed.
Madam Chairs and members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. We represent 86,000 active and retired educators everywhere across the state. I have a couple of comments today. First, I'm going to start with something that we're still working on with Chair Pryor and the Senate Chair as well. We'd like to see some stronger language about the science graduation standards to match up with the science standards changes that happened a couple of years ago. We're still working on that. But apart from that, this is a fantastic bill, and this really recognizes the voice of workers and their needs to support the students in their classrooms. I'd like to thank the chair for including the language she mentioned earlier in Article 4, Section 37, removing the basic skills test for teachers. This will get 800-some teachers automatically to a higher tier and get more job security. I appreciate the inclusion in Article 4, Section 48, requiring culturally responsiveness to be added to the principal development and evaluation piece. And then the language in Article 4, Section 26, expanding the BA exemption for our arts and world language teachers to bring more teachers into these areas. These are fantastic improvements. Largely, though, I'd like to focus on changes in Article 4 that really bring the worker voice to the table here. This includes language allowing bargaining for e-learning days, ensuring that Tier 1 teachers and early learning teachers are also at the bargaining table, aligning probationary days, and expanding the mandatory subjects of bargaining to include class size and staffing. Members, this bill is making incremental changes to allow school employees to share power with their employers. If you believe in worker voice, you will support this bill. If you don't, then please know that your objections are due to objections with collective bargaining and objections to democracy. So I am happy to be working with committees that support workers and support democracy. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Finally, we have Adele Shuni. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adele Shuni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education, and thank you for the opportunity to share our support for the education policy omnibus bill that Chair Pryor has put together. First, I want to thank Chair Pryor for including so many provisions from the governor and lieutenant governor's policy bill, which is predicated on our Due North education plan. The proposals in the bill focus on centering the whole child in all that we do and builds Minnesota's world-class education through a safe and welcoming environment with caring and qualified teachers so that students as unique individuals are seen, valued, and heard as they come into our school buildings every day. I'm going to highlight just a few of the packages today and why they're important. Creating a self and welcoming environment requires providing programs and supports where students see themselves in their education and feel protected. Thank you for embedding education, ethnic studies and Indigenous education for all in our academic standards while still allowing students flexibility in their schedule to pursue their academic interests. We have filled staff supports funded during the 2021 legislative session, and this will embed the fabric of our increasingly diverse state across all of our academic standards. We also appreciate the inclusion of all the past due proposals for American Indian education, from honoring students' right to wear items of cultural significance to banning mascots depicting American Indians, creating Indigenous Peoples Day, empowering parent advisory committees, data sharing with tribal nations. This will also, all of these take the necessary steps towards supporting some of our most underserved students. This will also be supported by increases in American Indian education aid, which you heard about in the governor's budget bill. We know that students need to be in the classroom to succeed academically. That is why we're proposing next-generation alternatives to exclusion that's critical to the academic, mental, behavioral, and social-emotional trajectories of our young learners' lives. We commit to continuing to collaborate with teachers and administrators on what language allows them to implement these strategies with the most fidelity on behalf of students, while also addressing the concerns that they bring forward. This policy language also works in tandem with investments by the governor and lieutenant governor to support professional development in non-exclusionary discipline practices, alternatives to suspensions, and model discipline policies. And I'll just note really briefly, we also appreciate supports like protecting educators who teach about federally protected classes. We support the PSEO statement around making sure that students can choose their PSEO programs of their choice regardless of their religious affiliation or anything based on protected class. And thank you for including several proposals to allow us to increase transparency and accountability in our oversight over participants in federal nutrition programs. And again, thank you for the opportunity to provide support for this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Vinnie. With that, members, we'll go to the table for a brief discussion. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Pryor, for bringing this bill. I know that the policy committee, which I do not sit on, has been doing a lot of hard work on this, so I appreciate being able to then see the fruits of that labor. I just want to make a statement and correct the record. We heard some folks talking about that perhaps this change to Article 2, Section 39, on pages 38 and 39 of this version of the bill, the PSEO faith statement. I do not believe this discriminates against students of faith. In fact, I believe that this change allows access to students of faith of many different types of faith. And as a graduate of a college that is faith-based and did not require a faith statement, I don't see how the language that I'm looking at on these two pages would be discriminatory as a product of K through 12 public schools and as a product of a religious-based higher education. I don't see any problem with this, and I appreciated being able to attend school with people of all different faiths in my faith institution and not having to prescribe so narrowly to one view. So I do not see religious schools losing out to secular students or that this discriminates against students of faith in any way. Thank you for boldly leading on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Paris Vega.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Giving you a highlight there, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Pryor. As a Boricua, proud Puerto Rican born in the state of Minnesota, I find the pride in my culture, not because I learned it in school and it was not granted in any curriculum for my family and my cousins, who we come from every shade of brown, from the darkest to the lightest. I know about who I am and who I was as a child as early as my soon-to-be four-year-old because of the curriculums of the indigenous movements and connecting our indigenous movements here on this Dakota Anishinaabe land. The importance that this bill brings, not only for our American Indian families, but for all of our American families, is justice. We cannot go into a cycle which has been brought together by a caste system. I'd like to encourage members of this committee and of the public to read Isabel Wilkerson's Caste Origins of Discontent, because it really was helpful for my students in high school to actually get a highlight of our book of the year while we were stuck in our Zoom classes, for them to be connected to why we are going through what injustices look like, from racism to poverty, discriminations on any level, regardless of race, but just on how much money your parents make or what country you may have been born in. These are the keynotes. Not everything's perfect the first trip around. You learn when you're building an airplane, right? We've learned about that in history. But we cannot learn about how to move forward without being connected to the realities that we are here in this native land because of a middle passageway that was painful, that continues generational trauma. You can't cover up the potholes and don't think that they're gonna get ripped up again. You gotta find how to do redevelopment and restructuring in curriculums, in the system, and for education in our future. We're paying attention to our future. We're paying attention to our present. And we're paying attention on how we can heal all of us
starting in the state of Minnesota and having a reflection in a global impact. This is how we can grow. This is how we plant those seeds. This is not about trying to connect leaves to the tree. No, if the fallen leaves have fallen, we can't just go back. We've got to go straight to the roots. Straight to the roots here. And I'm really proud to see Representative Keeler's impact as an Indigenous woman here in this bill incorporating our American Indian history, because that's what connected me to stay focused. But it wasn't coming from our teachers. And when I became a Tier 1 teacher, I was very proud to be able to share what our cultural leaders taught us. Because you know what happens? The kid finds themselves. Whether they're Puerto Rican, whether they're Irish or Sweden, whether they're African from East Africa or African American that came here to build the building that we're in, that was, what, a blueprint of Cass Gordon, but who really built the places that we're in here are African Americans that came from slavery and chains. So let's talk about history and facts here. Some folks may be in a sunken place, and that's okay. That's a part of the healing place. Some not, but let's not make most folks in there. Let's figure out how to heal from coming out of the sunken place of greed. Because that greed shouldn't be placed on profit over people. It should be about truth and facts. And this is the reality here. The reality is that we are coming from a racist society that was built by greed. And this bill, it brings an angle of an aspect to the true folks of this land. How are we going to be connected to the land in agriculture and health care and in housing? And most of all, the importance of not being ignorant by being educated. We need this in our education. And I'm thankful to see that. It's a step moving forward. Gracias.
Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. Other comments? Representative Bateberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Pryor, for your hard work on this bill. Just a couple things that Rep. Purcell, we'll just have to agree to disagree on the PSEO piece. I think it's a blatant discrimination on people of faith. Even going back to 2017, 2018, the Attorney General's office put the brakes on this proposal. So I'll leave that at that. I have a lot of questions, but we can talk more offline on that. I just want to say thank you to the testifiers. We saw a very, very different perspective from our testifiers today. And I think that's healthy. And I think it's okay. But to our testifiers about PSCO, thank you. Thank you for coming and sharing your story about how this will impact you, and it will limit options. If we continue to move down this discriminatory path, it will eliminate options. To our testifiers that testified about the ethnic studies, thank you. Thank you for telling your story and sharing it in such a powerful way. And then I want to thank the testifiers who testified about non-exclusionary discipline. And I'm going to go back actually to something Chair Pryor said in our previous bill that we discussed. And I may not have written it right, Chair Pryor, so you'll have to give me some grace. But basically, Chair Pryor said, dictating on high the answers and not including people that are involved at the table is wrong. Well, we just had two testifiers testify that are experts. They are the people in the building doing the work with discipline. And there's more that weren't able to testify. That's who we should be listening to. Because I still have not heard from the department the feedback from the listening sessions that the Department of Education held with these principals. Still don't have that information. My only assumption is the department didn't like the answer they got from the principals, so now we're just gonna slow roll this until it moves out. That's unacceptable. That's poor leadership. And I'll stop at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. Any other further comments? Representative Clardy, and then we'll go to the author.
Rep. Pryor, thank you so much for bringing this bill. This bill has so much in it. The teacher of color piece was a big aspect because growing up in Lakeville, going through the schools, I had one teacher that was of color, and he was a Spanish teacher. So having that piece in there. Also, the piece about the Metro Deaf, including that in there, a lot of times with funding, that whole community's been overlooked. The diversity within the bill is really important. Also, I clearly understand the disciplinary exclusion piece. I think that's really relevant because oftentimes it was like communities of colors that were discriminated against with that piece. There were kids that were dismissed because of having like toys. Okay, I myself was hit over the head by a chair from a student and had a traumatic brain injury. The reason I'm bringing that up, okay, so that might have been a system or a place where that might have been a case to look at something like that. But the reality is that child did not have the support systems, did not have the counselors, did not have the social workers, did not have the surround services that this bill is including. And then as far as the PSEO piece, I come from a very diverse family. And to me, what that says is even though I am, you know, of a Christian faith, my sister was Muslim, so she would have to sign that form if she wanted to go there to get free classes or to get, you know, access to that. And I just think that we need to be really mindful of the what we put in the bill and the, you know, the intention of the bill and how it affects the bigger public. So thank you for bringing this broad bill to us. Nothing's perfect, but I think you have a lot of really, really good pieces in it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. With that, seeing no further questions, Representative Pryor, your final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Bigberg, maybe you remember in our last committee meeting or one of our last committee meetings that we actually brought forward an amendment to the bill on the disciplinary exclusionary discipline that reflected it was from MD, and it reflected the conversation that they had. So it didn't leave out, you know, everything. But again, we did make, there was that attempt to incorporate the latest feedback on exclusionary discipline. And that was, we tried to make it clear when the amendment was introduced, where it was coming from and what the process was that we got it. And so I think, you know, I think that we actually put it in the bill, changes based on the feedback that that had been received from it, that MDE had received. But then also, as I said, this is, you know, this bill and this language has been around for a couple cycles now. And that it actually, the beginning of it did include and has always included professional educators. And when you hear Representative Richardson again, as she brought it forward the first time in our policy committee, will be heard on Friday, I think, here in finance. She has, it does reflect professionals in the field that are doing this work, but it also reflects the families, and it reflects the data that we have about who gets excluded from the classroom. And that's what we're dealing with. Who it is that's been excluded, who has been expelled, beginning at the youngest ages, and then what that means to a child's education. So I think that this is very much, and that section of the bill is very much an organic, not from on high, because I'm not an expert on it, and I didn't write those pieces, but it came from the grassroots. It came from families. It came from students. It came from professional educators that saw the problem in the classroom of how things were being handled. And then also, just even now, it says that there are exceptions where this might be what you have to fall back on. So it does not write a mandate, every case, every child, every situation. This is off the table. It's not in the bill. But more discussion on that part of it, because we're going to have the bill author that really is the one that's been working all these years. That's going to discuss that again, and we can have more discussion at that point. We have to, especially in the committee, it's good to be, you know, we have this opportunity to be come back and be accurate in what we're saying. And I appreciate the time to keep bringing forward that part of the information, too. So here we are. It's lots of discussion, and I think there'll be more discussion moving forward as we have this part incorporated into our greater education bill, which I keep coming back to. You know, this is one part. We are sitting here in education finance, bringing the resources to say these policies can have meaning in our schools. And to say that these are mandates that are unfunded is not telling the whole picture. So just understand, we are sitting here hearing this bill in education finance. And that's my concluding statement.
Thank you, Representative Pryor, and thank you for all your work and the work of the folks on the Education Policy Committee, and so lucky to have you as a partner in this. With that, members, I'll renew the motion that I'll lay House File 1269 over for inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. And with that, members, we are adjourned.